It's Mail It In Friday, so you can light her up this weekend with Old Tomorrow Craft Beer.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Mail It In Friday kicking off, 4 p.m., going into the weekend, feeling good.
And I would like Malls to change the music theme for the rest of the show because I'm embarking on a new adventure this evening.
All right, what's your plan?
I'm going salsa dancing.
No, you're not.
I am.
How did you get roped into that?
That does not need to be discussed, but I'm beginning my career as a salsa dancer this evening. So for now on, for the rest of this Mail It In Friday, the tunes will be accordingly.
So what kind of music is that? Like, who's the big act in salsa?
Dude, do you think I know?
Well, if you're going to get involved, but when you got into snowboarding, I'm sure you started tracking more of it and trying to get a read on the history of snowboarding, right? Like, if you're going to get into salsa here, and I'd love to know how you got roped in, because there's no way you really want to do this. You realize it's tough. Like, it's really tough, is my understanding. There's a lot of movement, a lot of cardio.
What do you think? I'm going to be like Chris Farley out on the floor doing the Chippendales dance?
Like, I kind of picture that.
Really?
I need you in a Mexican luchador mask, no shirt, doing the salsa.
So you think the guy beside me, he's going to be like Swayze and I'm Farley?
Yeah, kind of. What was Farley's name, too? It was like the best name in that skit. It was like Ralph or something like that. It was such an awful name. It was the best. The Chippendale.
They both had no tarps on, and Swayze is just jacked.
He's shredded.
And Farley geared down, too. And he had a pro barrel hanging over. It was outrageous.
I remember his name. Barney. His name was Barney. And the Farley's name was Barney in the Chippendale skit. I don't remember what Swayze went by.
Mark, see if we can find any like audio from that skit, because it was a classic.
Such a classic. Well, and I saw something on that afterwards, like the best of Chris Farley. Because, you know, SNL, I guess they would still do it, I would assume. Like, Will Ferrell's got one, Sandler, Farley, Eddie Murphy. And they were interviewing Mike Myers, and he said, like, I knew that my role as like the three judges was going to make or break the skit, because they had to pretend as if it was real, like they were taking it seriously. So he's like, if I laughed at all, it's done, it's over. Like, what made that skit so beautiful was the three of them. It was him, Kevin Nealon, and a woman, I can't remember who she was. And they're all sitting there, like, taking notes, like, interesting. Like, this is really well done. And then the end, it goes, Barney, we loved you, but you've got such a bad body, we couldn't possibly pick
they
you.
Said that?
I'm pretty sure that's the way it went.
But Barney put some hustle into it.
He actually had great moves.
He was good, but he was so big.
I find big fellas can dance better than the average person. Wouldn't you say?
There is.
Like, that might be a stereotype, but I don't think so.
There's a YouTube video of a guy on vacation. You know how they have everyone at the pool? They do, like, a summer, like, exercise, dancercise routine. And there's a big fella that just dominates the whole dance. And people just stop and they start looking at him. They can move. Big guys can move.
Oh, man, if they're light on their toes and they start dancing, I need video. I need video of you working out the salsa moves tonight. And this has got to be a long-term commitment. Like, if you're doing, like, Dancing with the Stars kind of routine.
Like snowboarding. I got roped into another adventure.
I'll give you credit, man. You live your life.
I'm going to rollerblade. Like, I got a lot of stuff going on.
Good for you.
Flying.
That's got to be the biggest thing.
Yeah, it's all good.
Flying changes your whole life. I can't believe you didn't fly for, like, a decade. I still can't believe that.
Yeah.
You had access to so many different things, and
you know the
take
biggest
advantage.
One, the south of France.
Right. Matt Sundin and his yacht.
With champagne.
Brings a tear to my eye.
Me too. Now it does.
Makes me feel like Shaq's foot. Did you get a glimpse of Shaquille O'Neal's foot on TNT last night?
He must have walked on a marathon too in the rain. His toenail fell off. Remember I told you.
That was the most disgusting foot I've seen since Mama June's forklift foot in Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. Do you remember that, Mama June?
I remember Mama June, but I don't particularly remember, like, I don't remember that episode.
She had a forklift foot, like a forklift fell on her foot, and her foot is so mangled, so savage, it's the most disgusting appendage I've ever seen in my life. And she had, like, lint in there, and there was stuff, like, I think there were things crawling around. It was gross. And Shaq's foot is so mashed up, it might rival Mama June's forklift foot. It was so gross. You got to see the picture. We tweeted it out, and I'm sure if you're on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, you can't miss it. But speaking of Mama June, have you seen that she's lost, like, a lot of weight from Here Comes Honey Boo Boo? Do you remember her? Sugar Bear was her husband. And
yes, it was, she was the mom.
Yeah, she was, like, well over 300 pounds, I think. And I guess she's lost, like, 200 pounds. So now they're trying to claim, like, she's back in the game or...
Bring it back.
Not with that foot.
Bring back the spaghetti sauce. A little mayo and ketchup.
Sketty? Sketty and a forklift foot. Sketty is the best.
No one makes a pasta sauce like me. I was thinking, okay, here comes the ground beef, tomato sauce. No, mayo and ketchup.
Sketty.
God.
Down it with some Mountain Dew, and you're off to the races.
So what do you think my approach should be to salsa? Just kind of go with the flow?
Yeah, I guess,
man. Because one thing I will tell you, I'm a very coachable athlete. Like, you just kind of show me movements. Like, just, I can imitate stuff. So just show me what to do, and I'll do it.
All right, man. I'll give you a wee-gi on that.
Wee-gi? I think Taddy's upset about wee-gi non-gi.
He's not happy about wee-gi non-gi. So we might have to put that to rest, but realistically, we probably won't. We're going to call Noodles today in about an hour. Ray's off today, so Noodles will join us around 5:05, 5:10. With Ottawa out, all seven Canadian teams out. So the Canadian Cup drought gets to 24 years. It'll be 25 next year. Around 5:05 or so, we're going to rank the Canadian teams in terms of the chances of them winning the Cup next year. As it currently stands, I'm sure we'll update this again in September when we see what they've done over the summer. We'll talk about the likelihood of them addressing certain things. But we'll get Noodles on. We'll cold call him. We'll get him involved in this. And we'll rank them 1 through 7, the three of us, how we see it as it currently stands. Canadian teams with the best shot at winning a cup next year.
I'm just telling you, my list is based on a few different things. Obviously, personnel as is, but the possibility of upgrades in certain situations that could put a team over the top.
All right, we can bring that up. We can talk our way through it.
And we'll revisit this in September.
Oh, yeah, going into the season next year, we'll absolutely do that. But the better team won last night. Pittsburgh is the better team. They were the better team last night again. It's a great game. Like, it was boring out of the gate the first period, but then once they started potting goals and started moving and shaking, I'll give full credit to Ottawa because Boucher, he obviously had a game plan. He wanted them to play a boring style, but in overtime, they were moving. Like, that Erik Karlsson put on an absolute clinic in overtime.
Yeah.
A clinic.
Just the amount of time he was playing. Like, Bobby Mack, we were watching the game, he's like, he's played 457 of the last eight. He's played 920. Like, this guy just never comes off the ice.
And he gets smoother, and his game slows down as the intensity rises.
Yeah. That's
what the amazing thing. Isn't it? Yeah. It's amazing. Like, he's dangling in his own zone in double OT. Like, Roman Polak would put that in the 25th row.
That's the separation from great players. You look at a guy like Sidney Crosby, they just have that clutch gene where not a lot of guys have. You know, I think it was Scottie Pippen the other day saying, I didn't have the clutch gene, but you know what I had? Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
He was the greatest of all time. Some guys are just designed. They're built differently than everybody else. Obviously, they have talent. They have the ability. But their ability to make plays when it really matters, that's something special that very few athletes have.
Well, Sid, we talked a lot about him yesterday, and we've talked about him for years and his legacy and what it means. And now
well,
going
I totally
to his
agree with
cup.
What your statement yesterday. I think Craig, we got to do research on this. Steph, try to find this where Craig, he had the top 10 or 20 players of all time, and I think Sid was around 8 or 10. And it's so difficult to compare different eras in sports because the point totals from the past are so high. But maybe it's time where we start thinking about Sidney Crosby as a top 3 or 4 player of all time.
Here's why I think he should be already and why I think he will be when the dust settles and we look back. I heard this as a kid. I'm sure you heard the same thing. Two players stick out that get credit for changing the game.
Bobby Orr and Wayne Gretzky.
That's it. Crosby has changed the game. And let me explain it for you. He has made it imperative for you to be considered the best player in the game. You have to play defense, and you have to work for every single inch on the ice. He has changed the game. If you want to be the best player, you can't just score points and score goals and mail it in.
And I think my dad always brings up like a fascinating point. Of all the like so-called best players of all time, the best player in the game, he is the hardest working best player that's ever been around.
And I think that's going to have to happen forever now. I really do. Like Lemieux, we laugh about it. He was so talented. You say it all the time. He'd sit at the blue line. He didn't care about defense.
No.
If he had to, he could contribute.
Yeah. The last 2 minutes of a game, if he was out in the ice, he would have to pay attention because
right.
he didn't want to be out there for a goal. But for the most part, it was put the puck on my stick in the neutral zone, and I'm going to do some magic and watch out.
And incredibly effective. Yeah. This isn't about taking runs at these guys. We know who they are and where they sit in terms of the Mount Rushmore of hockey. Gretzky, the same thing, though. Gretzky, because of the era, he didn't have to back check. He didn't have to play defense.
The game is completely different right now.
Completely different, but I really do believe Crosby has played a prominent role in changing that game. And I think when you look at Matthews and McDavid, the two centermen who we all believe are going to compete for that top spot for the next decade, I think they have to follow the role of Crosby and his 200-foot game, working for every inch, playing defensively, as opposed to just saying, I'm going to be considered the best player because I score the most points. Like, I really think that is a way where Matthews actually could surpass McDavid. McDavid in 10 years may have more points, but if in the end we look at Matthews and say, okay, he's close, because you have to be close. To be the best player, clearly up front, you got to put up points. I mean, and that's why Sid is so great. Because when all is said and done, points per game, no one has those kind of numbers in his era. He's got the best points per game stat going over the past decade. But there was a play in the second or third period, watching him bust ass to get back and to help out in his own end. Gretzky never did that. Lemieux never did that. They just never did.
No.
So I think it's time to consider Crosby as a revolutionary player, a guy who's changed the game. Now, maybe it was going to happen organically with the way the game is played anyway, but I really think it's time to look at him and say, you know what? Maybe not to the same extent that Gretzky and Orr did, but if you want to be considered the guy, it's not just about points anymore. You've got to do what Sid does. He works all over the ice.
He's a total package.
He's the total package. I think he's changed the game.
It's just for the people that have known, like Craig or the Quizmaster, that have known all different eras of hockey. How do you equate what Sidney has done as opposed to those legends? It's so difficult to compare different eras.
It is. Of course it is. But it's fun to.
unlike our listener the other day saying just... Yeah. Don't worry about it.
The email yesterday is like, it's a team sport. This isn't, well, there's team sports in the NFL. The NFL is a team sport.
That's part of our job. We have to do it.
It's fun. And listen, LeBron, like last night was a walkthrough. You couldn't even watch the game. And it got to the point where Shaq's foot and Barkley talking about how he just wants to watch the hockey game and he bet on the Senators. That was the only piece of information that came out of that game that's relevant. The Warriors were up 30 before you could even flinch. It was terrible. It's an awful game, but we got what we wanted. Warriors, Cavs in the NBA final. So now it's like the NBA season began. It's almost like the season began last night at the end of
the
fourth quarter.
Were up. I think you said the Warriors.
Yeah, the Cavs. The Cavs were up 30 before you could flinch. But it's almost as if the season began when the fourth quarter came to an end last night.
And I think yesterday Shaq was talking and he had his list of the greatest players and he had LeBron pretty far down there.
Charles did too. He had them like seven or eight, like
that's
behind
what I meant. Charles had his list,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, man, LeBron is that far down? This guy's going to eight straight finals.
I don't buy it for a second.
Is it eight or seven?
He's been to seven straight now.
Eight total.
Eight total. And his all-around game, like he has, there's a lot of similarities in terms of the way he approaches the game and the way Crosby does. Like Kobe was ruthless. And could score, like him and Jordan could score at a different level than anyone else. And he could clearly play defense and be clutch. But LeBron contributes in so many different areas that Kobe just didn't and really couldn't because he wasn't physically capable of contributing the same way. But I was surprised by that too. I mean, to have him at seven or eight, I think it's like having Sid at seven or eight. I think they've both proven. Yeah,
maybe they're both in the same boat.
Move them up the list.
Move them up the list is right.
Like, what more do these guys have to do? But I'm looking forward to both finals. I mean, the NBA finals, this is what we've been waiting for all year.
That's it. The rest is just procedure.
Well, exactly. Exactly. It was just almost like a part of the plot that you had to get through so that you could get to the big finish. But
and what's your Jerry's percentage of us? Because this year I said at the first day of the NBA season, well, let's just get this over with because it's Cleveland and Golden State. Is like, what's your Jerry's percentage of that being different this fall?
I don't see it any differently next year.
No, zero.
I can't imagine anyone could possibly pick two other teams. How could you? They're all coming back with the same team. I'm assuming Durant, I believe he has the option to opt out, but I think he'll just re-sign with Golden State. He'll do what LeBron's been doing. Opt out, get paid more to stay with the same team.
Why wouldn't he?
Why wouldn't you? No one cares anymore that he left Oklahoma City. LeBron did the same thing. Everyone made a big deal of it. Then he goes to Miami. He's in the finals his first year, expected to win. He didn't end up winning that first year. But people forgot about Cleveland really quickly. No one cares about him leaving Oklahoma City if he wins a title. And that's what's at stake here with Durant. And it's going to be an outstanding matchup. But I saw before we came on, NBC sent out a press release that they had the highest rated playoff game featuring a Canadian team in their history.
Really?
Last night. Like averaging over 3 million people, which for the NHL is huge. I think a lot of that is the Pittsburgh Crosby Malkin factor. But I also think they've benefited greatly from the NBA playoffs being such a formality and being such a buzzkill.
Absolutely.
You know?
I would bet, though, that NBC is pretty jacked up that old Pitt's going to the final.
You think so?
What do you think NBC would think of Ottawa-Nashville as a final?
Probably not ecstatic about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is a win. It's the better teams, more compelling storylines, better overall players. Full credit to Ottawa. Great run. Good for them. We'll get to our list in about 45 minutes, see where we have them ranked in terms of next year's Canadian teams and their opportunity to win a cup.
Guaranteed you have Toronto first.
I don't. I got them real high, though. Real high. Really, really high.
I think you're just giving something away there.
I might be. We're going to catch up with Darren Oliver, who's a special assistant to the GM with the Rangers, and he was a Blue Jay for a couple of years as well, to tee up this series with Donaldson and Tulowitzki coming back. I want to get his take from an outsider's view on if the Jays are their biggest rival, how much do they hate Bautista. Rougned Odor is in the lineup tonight, but he's been awful this season. But do they expect anything to happen? Kind of get a bit of a different view because we're so focused from a Toronto standpoint. Let's see what people outside of the city feel about the Jays and where they're going here.
Did you read that Gary Sheffield piece in the Players Tribune about what he thinks he would do as a commish?
No.
Some very interesting comments. One of his ideas is if the pitcher hits the batter is allowed to go to the mound with his bat and take care of business. I'm like, Gary, that's a little bit offside. Because he's fed up with pitchers being able to do whatever they want.
Well, I understand that.
I do, too. You want to play that game? I'm going to the mound with my bat.
I'll say this. I mean, it probably would be a deterrent. It's like the instigator rule. If a guy's allowed to bring his bat, are you really going to hit him? I don't think you would. Or if you're going to hit him, you better knock his ass out. Like, that's another thing. I guess if you're sitting there, you're like, this guy's going to run at me with his bat and beat me to a pulp. I better plunk this guy right in the temple and drop him.
Well, it's such a gray area because how do you know? The unintentional ones, guy's going to be like, what's going on here?
Well, that's true, too. Because that still happens. Like, emotions run so high.
Well, pitchers
so
have been
quickly.
Freaking out early on in the season because they're getting warnings for a lazy curveball that hits a guy in the rear end. And it's like, if I was going to hit him, I'd throw a fastball.
Mm-hmm. Well, that happened just a couple weeks ago in the Boston-Baltimore series.
Exactly.
That's where we got the Eckersley line.
Have an idea.
I mean, have an idea.
75-mile-an-hour
curve
hook, and the guy gets tossed. Have an idea.
I mean, have an idea.
Salsa tonight?
I mean, have an idea.
I need to place eyes on that. I have to.
Bamboreo, bamboreo.
Tyler texting in, would you dare call Gary Sheffield Jerry Sheffield?
I'll call him Jerry Sheffield. Jerry Sheffield. He also had an interesting idea. You're going to have to read it in the break, the article, about how to shorten games. He was like, in extra innings, the manager can pick which guys he wants to go up the bat. He had all kinds
of
crazy
stop
guys.
It, Jerry.
Yeah.
These guys, they get writing, man. And usually they have a ghostwriter anyway. It's not them.
Well, if I had a ghostwriter, I would hope that he would say, Jeff, do you really want to write this? Like, take the bat out to the mound?
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
lunatic mode.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Darren Oliver will join us. We'll tee up the series starting tonight with Texas in town. Get an outside-the-market take on where the Jays are at. Donaldson and Tulowitzki returning tonight. Donaldson hitting in the two spot. Tulo a little bit further down the lineup. So we'll tee up a big series. We'll get Noodles on a little bit later in the afternoon. We'll get to our list in terms of Canadian teams and their cup chances for next season. Mail It In Friday continues. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app.
Bamboleo, bamboleo.
How much alcohol has to go into this night? Like, what's going to be your routine before you step on the dance floor?
What's a good, like, what is salsa? Is it like Mexican dancing?
Yeah, I think it's like Latin American or Latin. I don't know if it's like exclusive to a country.
You're right. Latin is the appropriate term.
Is it Mexican?
I don't know. Like, you do it in Mexico? I don't know.
I'm sure they do. You're doing it in Toronto.
So what do they serve, like mojitos?
Yeah, there you go. A couple mojitos?
Maybe seven. Seven mojitos.
All right, there you go. How about some Old Tomorrow craft beer? That's what I've got planned for tonight.
And this chaser?
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is.
This hour of Mail It In Friday is brought to you by Old Tomorrow Craft Beer, and it's brand new Lighter Up Light Lager. It's super crisp, clean, and crushable. Look for Lighter Up Lager, now available at the beer store. I've got a case at home. I will be putting a dent in this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to catch up with Darren Oliver, but the past 2 days at 4:30, the guest we had booked stiffed us.
It's been a bit of a circus.
It's not good, eh?
No, it's not.
And he's already sent in a note saying, give me a few minutes. I would say 50-50 he doesn't answer.
We'll get his advice on salsa dancing, if he has any.
Well, today is also a big anniversary in Texas Rangers history. We'll tell you about that in 2 minutes. See, Fergie's on to it. He knows. Don't plug the 4:30 guest, because there's a really good chance the guy's going to stiff us anyway.
Say cerveza.
Is it imperative that for you to dance salsa, you have to listen to this crap?
Well, what do you want? Like Drake?
Yeah, like why couldn't you do salsa to hip-hop or country?
Dude, I'll tell you on Monday.
The O-Dog is doing some salsa tonight. That's why we're basically just making you feel horrible and miserable by making you listen to salsa music, at least for the hour. I don't know if I can do this all afternoon.
We're doing it all afternoon.
How many more salsa songs are there? I mean,
dude, there's lots. Yeah,
like Mullen knows. Mullen is actually the complete opposite of salsa.
He's Googling salsa songs.
There's no way he knew there was anything called the salsa dance or salsa music. And I'm not far behind him.
We should have a 1050 Overdrive salsa night somewhere. For grit grinders only. Imagine that combo.
That would be outstanding.
Our listeners at a salsa place.
Old Tomorrow Craft Beer shows up, supplies the gentlemen with some beers, ladies with some beers.
I'm down with it.
Let's make it happen. Do you know what happened 24 years ago today?
Canseco over the off his noggin?
Carlos Martinez hit a fly ball to right field, and it went off his head and over the fence. That's got to be one of the top five most memorable moments in MLB history, doesn't it? Like, wouldn't it be? I don't know. Maybe that's outrageous, but...
That makes every top 10 list of goofy things that happen in sports.
Like, can you be considered a baseball fan if you don't know that reference?
No. You have to know that reference. I was thinking you were talking about Bautista...
No.
Texas. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what anniversary you were talking about, but as soon as you said 24 years, I'm like, off Canseco's noggin.
Yep. Running to right, fly ball off his head and over the fence. And he kind of laughed it off. He played it up okay. But we're going to get Darren Oliver on, and as a former pitcher, I wonder what the reaction would be if you were a pitcher. Like, would you hate on Canseco? I mean, it's an innocent mistake, I guess, but... What the hell are you doing? How does a ball go off your head and over the fence for a home run?
I think it's one of those situations where sometimes you just have to get on the bus, get on the plane, you have a beard and say, I just can't believe I saw that. I can't be mad at you. It was outrageous to even see.
The old Sam Rosen?
Yeah.
I can't believe what I just saw.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're probably right. I think it's got to be one of the top 10 most referenced plays, at least of the past 30 years.
No question.
Like, that includes, like, Carter's home run walk-off.
But you're talking about two different things. You're talking about unbelievable moments in sports, polarizing moments to bloopers.
Right, but I'm talking about anything that's happened in baseball that has people talking or that people could reference. Like, over the past 30 years... If you were to get a baseball fan to try to just... knock off a list on the top of his head.
Yeah, but you're like, when I think of unbelievable plays watching in the playoffs, I'm thinking about Jeter
at home
against Oakland, and then he makes the play, but then I don't go right after that to Canseco off his noggin home run.
But I'm saying I think they're both in the same stratosphere in terms of memories and being able to reference it and having seen it, like in top 10 lists and stuff. Like, SportsCenter does top tens every night.
Canseco
play.
You're talking about two different things. Unbelievable plays and bloopers.
Right.
Let's ask the baseball guy what he thinks.
All right, let's bring in former Jay, longtime MLB pitcher, currently the Rangers assistant to the GM. I'm sure you're aware of this, Darren. Today is the 24th anniversary of Jose Canseco chasing that Carlos Martinez fly ball on right that went off his head and over the fence. like, how memorable is that? Over the past 30 years... That's got to be one of the most memorable plays in baseball, doesn't it?
I'll tell you another funny story. The guy that was playing center field that was laughing, I don't know if you remember that guy. His name's David Hulse.
Okay.
He's my trainer. We work out together like 3 days a week. So, yeah, I definitely remember that.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's his claim to fame.
Well, no, I would
guess,
but
do you categorize it? I mean, we're talking great plays, memorable plays, or is this just another section, which is bloopers?
This game definitely got to go on bloopers, no doubt.
Well,
who does that anyway? He's a big leaguer. He's supposed to catch that ball.
Well, no kidding, man. If you're in the little leagues, you can't let it go off the head and over the fence. I mean, it's an outrageous play.
But no chance.
As a pitcher, though, how would you respond to that? If you're in the moment, big game, you're feeling it, and this guy just gave up a home run off his head.
It wouldn't even have to be a big game, because if I was pitching and I saw the guy do that and they were laughing about it, we wouldn't be laughing when he got in the dugout. I'd have said something. That can't happen. Don't laugh about it though. You know what I mean? That guy gave up a home run.
Right. So you would have words with him. Like you would. Are we talking? You know, Papelbon, Harper, choke kind of routine, or just pull him aside and say, "Don't ever do that again."
I think it depends on what the score was. If I was winning by a couple of runs and it didn't really bother me, you know, I still was going to get the win, it'd be a different story. But if it was like the seventh inning and, you know, it kind of made the other team win the game and then they came in the dugout laughing, then we might have some problems.
Okay. With Darren Oliver, former Jay, longtime MLB pitcher, currently the Texas Rangers assistant to the GM. It's a big series for both teams. Both teams have come out of the gate slower than they were expecting. And the Jays, it can be a little bit difficult to track who their biggest rival is because it seems like they get in a fight with everyone they play. But I would say over the past couple of years, Texas would be at the top of my list in terms of teams that I'm looking forward to seeing the Jays play. On the other side of the aisle, I mean, where do the Jays rank for the Rangers in terms of top rivals right now?
I think it's more like this is like a ratings game. People just want to see, people like violence. but I think the way these two teams are playing, you know, at the moment, I think they're just going to be happy to just win the series. I'm hoping that's the way it is, and you know, nothing happens. But the way people like to talk about it, if something were to happen, you know, a bat flip or just any little thing, anything can happen.
How does it get to a point where the players just say, you know what, let's just move on from this and let's just play baseball? Does it just kind of happen organically where just somebody gets hit or there's a big home run, another bat flip? What do the players discuss amongst themselves?
I don't think they're really worrying about it. It's got to be like a bat flip. Obviously, you can't worry about breaking up the double play anymore since they took that rule out. So it's going to have to be a bat flip, maybe a Dyson Batista showdown late in the game or something like that. But I think that's really the only issue, I would think.
With Darren Oliver, former Jay, longtime MLB pitcher, currently Rangers assistant to the GM, Texas in town for three starting tonight. Bautista is obviously a polarizing figure throughout baseball. He's polarizing in his own hometown. You know him. You played with him. Is he the clear favorite for hatred in terms of the way Texas as an organization and as a fan base approaches this team? Is he clearly the number one enemy on this team?
I mean, it kind of seems that way throughout the league, but when I was with him, we got along good. Maybe it's just one of those guys where you love to have on your team, but you don't want to have him, you don't want to play against him because you know he might do something to kind of irritate, you know, other teams. But I mean, I got along with him, as long as he's out there helping the team win, and he's a good player. So people tend to kind of hate the good players. That's just the way sports is.
Well, and the bat flips are huge. I mean, I'm sure you saw it last week in Atlanta, down 5, he bat flips, and they go on to lose that game, and there was a lot of animosity built into that game anyway. Based on the way you know Bautista, do you get the impression like he wants to be hated, he's okay with being hated? I mean, what's your take on the way he feels about his perception league-wide?
I would think most people don't want to be hated. Everybody wants to be liked. I think just at the heat of the moment when he hits some home run or something like that, he just, he feels it. He does something that he probably doesn't realize he's flipping the bat that high. You know, usually get all that excitement going on, you get all that adrenaline flowing, things happen. But hopefully he'll learn from it. And nobody hits him this weekend. We just didn't want to just see some regular good baseball. And we don't want to have to talk about this all the time when the Rangers come play the Blue Jays or vice versa.
Well, you guys, again, are at 500 right now. You've lost your last three, but you've got a positive run differential. How do you feel about your team so far and the chances of getting back into the race in the AL West?
I mean, it's still pretty wide open in the West. Obviously, there's still 4 months left of baseball. You saw that we won like 10 games in a row. All it takes is have a hot month and get right back in it, you know, before the All-Star break and kind of see what happens at the end in August and September. But and I think that goes for every team. You definitely have to get hot, get a little streaky at some point and get back in it. But, usually it starts with the starting pitching. I mean, we can talk about hitting all day long, but it's always the starting pitching. You guys know that.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Darren. Enjoy the weekend. Thank you for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
All right, no problem.
Darren Oliver, former Jay, longtime MLB pitcher, currently Texas Rangers assistant to the GM, breaking a streak, actually calling in on the 4:30 time slot. We had a lot of time for that. And he's right about the starting pitching. I mean, tonight there's so much focus on Donaldson and Tulowitzki returning, but Happ appears to be closing in on a return, Liriano, but we don't know about Sanchez. And that's three-fifths of your rotation. I mean, Mike Bolsinger is starting tonight. That's not ideal. That's a hot take.
Yeah, well, also when all these guys coming back, you remember back in the Leafs were in the playoffs against us, and Tucker, I think, was hurt, and Sundin was hurt, and it was all about Gary Roberts and Alan McCauley. You got to worry about that collective sigh where everyone's like, oh, that guy's back. Maybe I don't have to do what I've been doing up to this point. And this guy's coming back, so maybe I can just wait for him to have the big hit or the big play. So the collective sigh, when the stars start coming back, it's a thing. It's a big thing, too.
Well, there's more pressure on these two, Donaldson and Tulowitzki, and Donaldson in particular, than any player I can remember in recent history coming off the DL because of where they are. 21 and 26, he's the face of the team, MVP 2 years ago. Gibbons said today, I believe it was, he's like, if we're going to get winning, these two really got to bring it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we know.
The Ryan O'Neills of the world, who is probably in love with the way Goins is playing right now. If Goins is taking a back seat and Tulowitzki stinks the joint out, it's like, what about my boy Goins?
Right. Well, he's not playing. I mean, Donaldson, Tulo, Travis, Morales, Smoke, that's going to be your lineup. You know, but you're right. I mean, Tulowitzki is a guy, I think Donaldson, if he's 100%, it's just a matter of time. He will start mashing again. He will start being productive. Tulowitzki has not been very productive offensively since he came here compared to what he used to be, and he'll never get back to what he used to be. But Goins, you also got to remember, it's only been a couple of months.
It's
a hot streak, good for him, but he's still
a replacement
player.
It's just fun to watch. It's fun to see.
Yeah. And you know that's going to be a part of the conversation. You're right. If Tulo starts, like, you know, 2 for 25 out of the gate.
Man, it's like catch all the balls you want, get all the grounders you want, but where's your offense?
Mm-hmm. They need it, and they're going to need it with, like, Bolsinger still going out and Biagini still getting starts. All right, Noodles in about 20 minutes. Looking back on the Pens getting past the Sens last night, we'll start looking ahead to the Cup Final, looking ahead to the NBA Finals. Jeremy Schapp from ESPN, E60. He's got a piece coming out on PK Subban. He's going to join us around 5:30. Future headlines at 6:30. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.
And now it's time for the 40-30 low center of gravity grit player of the game.
I'm a professional grinder.
We do have a little grit and grind when we reach in our pants and pull it out.
I'm going to go with Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think he had a pulse on his team. I think he's now established himself as an elite coach, knew when to press the right buttons, when to get Fleury out of the net, when to get Sheary back in, to have enough structure in place to survive with the D-man going down, no Chris Letang. Mike Sullivan's a grit grinder.
7-0 in the playoffs in series. 4-0 last year, 3-0 this year. 7-0, he hasn't lost a series.
He's now
in Pittsburgh.
He's now an elite coach in the NHL. There's no question. And you wonder all those troubles the Penguins have had throughout the years where it's like they just can't win in the playoffs, they can't get by Boston, they can't get by this team. If they had had this combo, the Murray, Sullivan, Malkin, Gino, Letang combo.
I'll throw Sid a shout-out. And Chris Kunitz, he's moved up and down the lineup. He got out there with Sid.
Hasn't scored since February 16th.
Right. That was a muffin, too. I can't believe that went in.
Well, Jean-Gabriel Pageau, decide if you're going to block a shot or you're going to be a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Either block it or get out of the way, let the goalie see.
Well, and Anderson did the Reimer skeleton. Like, he didn't have a clue where it was, where it was going.
He did the scarecrow.
Yeah, the scarecrow. That's right. What did I say?
Skeleton.
The scarecrow.
You've had a tough week, man. I don't know what it is about you.
I'll tell you what it is. I'm going to the gym now, and by 4 o'clock, I'm dragging ass.
You got to sneak in a nap.
Ideally, you're
drop
right.
Drop the kid off, do your workout, go home, a bite to eat, a little nap, and then come to work.
That would be the perfect routine. I'm going to start
mixing
that
in. And you know what's the best part about the nap?
A MyPillow.
Yeah.
That's right, man. Shut the mill on a MyPillow. I think my fear is I'll never wake up. Like, that's always been my biggest fear, is that I'm going to fall asleep, like, before a show, and just never get up. Wake up at, like, 6:30 in a panic.
That's a tough grind.
What would you possibly be doing in here, too? Because Noodles, with the wonky back, Vike Reestian didn't show up.
Dude, you understand. Like, I know I talk like an idiot, but I could make it work. It might be a little bit choppy, but I could get through it.
I don't disagree with you. I think you'd be okay. But I think there would be a moment of panic at 3:59:59 when you realize I'm actually not walking in those doors. I think there'd be a little bit of, wait a minute, I wasn't ready for this.
I'm having a good time. Not.
You would go Garth Algar for a little bit.
You love the idea of me and Noodles going Garth Algar.
It's my favorite reference. I'm having a good time.
I'm having a good time. Not.
All right, we're going to call up Noodles. Jeremy Schapp from E60's got a piece out this weekend on PK Subban. Future headlines later in the afternoon. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.